Radio's greatest hits of today and yesterday.
It's all right here on airchecks.com.
95 and a half KLOS Los Angeles. It's just a few minutes afternoon, and it's unfortunate that we have to put these last minute projects together, but Gail Murphy has done a lot of research and in a very short period of time has put together something special for us, a tribute to B. Mitchell Reed. Gail?
Thanks, Shauna. On Wednesday, March 16th, two things happened. One, we mourn the loss of a legend. B. Mitchell Reed, BMR, Beamer, passed away. Now, the details are he was discovered by his wife, Carol, at 6 a.m. at their home. He had passed away in his sleep. But the second thing that happened on March 16th, 1983, was we, and I mean all of us, saw the end of an era. For Los Angelinos, it was three decades of that special radio friend who talked to us on KFWB when that station rocked the world with color radio. Then KPPC with Tom Donahue when underground radio shook the roots of all those that lacked vision. And then on to KMET and finally on to KLOS with a two-year stopover in the 1960s in the Big Apple at WMCA to be one of their good guys. Now, before Mitch showed up on the West Coast, he was a confirmed jazz addict and he was a DJ for WOR in New York City. Now, what we plan to do in this hour is to try, if that's possible, to sketch Mitch's incredible radio life. To try and tell the story myself would be too mammoth a task since he was remembered for so many reasons. So what this hour will be is those that remembered him, knew him, and of course loved him, will do that for him. Mitch was born 56 years ago, Burton Mitchell Goldberg in Brooklyn, New York. But where did Beamer begin his career? Now, most think it was playing jazz at WOR in New York City or at KFWB here in town. But one of our engineers at KLOS, Al Samuels, recalls differently. As he remembers his first day working with Mitch, their air shift began and it went smoothly, and then the two begin to talk.
He started talking about when he was a kid, he worked up in the Catskills. His folks were in the clothing business, which Mitch had no intention of getting into. So they somehow found him a job up in the Catskills at a place called Grossinger's. And I had worked at Grossinger's for 2 years. So all of a sudden, we were one together. We had something in common besides being across the window from each other. And he had talked about how he was working as the daytime activities director, taking care of all the overly weight women who would come up and eat nothing but four or five meals a day and things like that, and how the hotel worked. And I remember down at the bottom of the hill from the hotel, there was a radio station, WVOS AM and FM, the voice of Sullivan County. And sure enough, I said, Mitch, did you ever work at the little radio station down at the bottom of the hill? He said, well, he had walked in one day and was talking to the owner, who happened to be short about four of his five announcers on the air. And they made Mitch the program director, and he had not ever been on the air before. So I gather from that was Mitch's first air job at WVOS in Liberty, New York, up in the Catskills.
Mitch graduated Boys High School in Brooklyn in 1944, and even then he showed a desire to be on the radio, as his boyhood friend Irwin Zucker recalls.
Hi, this is Irwin Zucker. I'm a public relations person and a long, long friend of B. Mitchell Reed. I first met B. Mitchell Reed back in high school at Brooklyn Boys High School in Brooklyn, New York. I happened to be president of the senior class of June 1944, and B. Mitchell Reed, then known as Burton Goldberg, was the head of the cheering squad. He was co-captain of the cheering squad, and he was also involved in the Glee Club, and he was also a winner in a declamations contest. That's a speaking contest for the best oration at the school. So we do know that early in his life, in his high school days at Brooklyn Boys High School, he showed definite vocal talents. And I have in front of me the yearbook of June 1944 called The Senior Recorder. And there's a little funny saying that they say after his name, He says here, he wants to sing on the radio, but his mother is afraid he'll scratch it. B. Mitchell Reed was the only student in the history of Brooklyn Boys High School to major in English as a foreign language. He got a little laugh from it, and so did everybody else.
Well, after playing jazz at WORAM, Mitch headed for the Big Orange, California, to KFWB. That was in the early 1950s. While he was there, he befriended Cleve Herman, who today is still employed at KFWB as a sportscaster. Cleve recalls Mitch at KFWB.
My name is Cleve Herman, and I knew Mitch since the early 1950s when he came to KFWB to be our boy on the couch on the midnight to 6 a.m. shift, at which time he was playing the music of that time, which was largely the swing and some jazz. He was a, oddly enough, for a man that was associated with rock and roll for so long, a jazz addict at that time, at least. But I've, in trying to think about him, he had a sort of a musical timelessness because it was no adjustment at all for him to move into the early era of what was then called rock and roll and revel in it. And then, of course, he moved to what is generally termed hard rock at KMET and KLOS with no problem either. I think it had largely to do with his widespread interest in everything of music. He liked the sound of it. He liked the happiness of it. And he imparted a great deal of happiness to two generations that grew up with him right here in Los Angeles. B. Mitchell Reed was a constant joy. He was a ham bone and a hugger, and a guy who could laugh and cry in public with no problem or embarrassment at any time. One of the things of which he was the proudest, he at one time did his whole 6 hours from midnight to 6 a.m. of nothing but Frank Sinatra records. And he was sent a gold watch engraved to BMR from Francis Albert. And I don't think that an Emmy or a Grammy or anything else would have compared to that in Mitch's estimation. He revered the man. And, you know, then and you're talking about a guy who was the confidant of a host of rock people, too, later on. So he ran the full gamut of music.
Well, moving right along, in 1957, Chuck Bloor became the program director of KFWB, and color radio was born. It started out as a joke. If they had color TV, what would be next? Color radio?
Hayes, Gene Weed, Joe Yoakam, Elliot Field, B. Mitchell Reed, Bill Balance, Ted Quillen.
Here's a fabulous 40-inch high song for the music that you like best. On colorful color radio with the best DJs in the West.
This is the Air Force.
Well, KFWB and the Air Force took off like a shot. It had 51% share of the market. Cleve Herman explains exactly what that meant.
At one time, and for a prolonged period, KFWB commanded a 51% share, which meant more people were listening to KFWB than all the other radio stations in town combined. Granted, there weren't as many as there are now, and FM wasn't the factor that it is now, but it was just awesome. Even though, you know, there was very little physical identification of the personalities, if your name was mentioned at a party or in a bar, I mean, you were a celebrity if you were in any way associated with this station.
Well, as I mentioned, Chuck Bloor was the PD of KFWB, and Chuck explains how Mitch and the station made the transition. He also shares some fond memories.
I met Mitch Reed when I came to KFWB to introduce color radio to Southern California. Mitch was already there doing a jazz program. He called himself the boy on the couch, and he'd play the soft piano music in the background while he was kind of groaning into the microphone. And I told him that we were going to rock and roll, and he said, what? He couldn't do that. And he said, well, that's terrible. He said, I'm a jazz fan. I said, Mitch, you could be the number one DJ in the city. And he said, well, I'll sacrifice for that. So anyway, obviously he became number one very quickly. He was the first DJ at KFWB to attain the number one position in his time slot. And of course, maintained it until he left several years later to go to WMCA in New York. And one of the things that I remember most about Mitch was he was so enthusiastic about his program and his programming, and he just loved what he was doing. And he would get so excited and so enthused that he would get carried away with his own enthusiasm and start whistling. He would go, like this. And I'd constantly get into it. I said, Mitch, stop whistling. It's an ugly sound on the air. And so he went to WMCA, and I knew when he was going to be on and his hours and so forth. And so I sent him a telegram that I had time to arrive right in the middle of his program, and I said, Mitch, stop whistling. And as soon as he got off the air, he called me and said, you. And he'd been doing it. And I don't know, Mitch is just wonderful. You know that KFWB, he started from, the station started from nothing and went to its greatness in those days with Mitch, and then WMCA in New York did the same thing. Came back here, KMET, the same thing. And KLOS, he's just the same kind of class. He was something very special.
Also at KFWB at that time was Gary Owens, who worked with Mitch until Mitch went to New York City in 1962, and Gary went to KMPC. Gary gives his impressions and his remembrances.
I was impressed by him. I had heard Mitch earlier when he was doing a jazz show out of New York, I believe. Yeah, at WOR, I think, back in the 50s, before he'd come to the West Coast. And he had a different style prior to that time. He had always had a laid-back jazz kind of voice, because he had a very good voice. His rock and roll voice was different from that of his jazz voice in introducing someone like Count Basie or Neil Hefti or whatever it might be. Then when he came to KFWB, Chuck Bloor, who was the program director at the time, wanted Mitch to accentuate his voice and to speak twice as fast as what he was doing. So he took a man with a network-sounding voice and made him speak very quickly. And so that's how Mitch developed really his fast-speaking style, which he retained for a number of years, both at KFWB and WMCA New York. And my first impression, I tend to digress at times, my first impression of Mitch was, here's indeed a personality. Here's quite an individual. And, of course, I was never wrong with that impression. During those days, of course, I didn't realize that we would all be changing formats, but Mitch was a chameleon kind of person with format changes, because he could fit into any format and still sound very good with whatever it was, whether it be album-oriented rock or rock and roll or jazz or, I imagine, the opera. I never heard him do opera, but I'm sure he could have done that. He was a man who, I guess pretty much in the later years, would always wear something that was cool. Not, I don't mean in weight of clothing, but was hip at the time. Usually had a cigarette dangling from his lips. Always a 5 o'clock shadow. Usually a large sweater kind of piece of clothes. And a man who always looked like he was euphoric with the ambiance of whatever was taking place around him. Those sound like a lot of big words I've just made up out of the air, but he was a Mr. Cool for many, many years. I think the jazz overtone that he had started with early in his career sort of continued throughout his life, where you would ask him a question, hey, Mitch, what do you think of this? What about James Ray and the tuba and harmonica sound of If You Gotta Make a Fool of Somebody? And he'd say, hey, I dig it. You know, with that kind of an overtone to it.
Sam Riddle was also on staff at the Monster KFWB, and he talks about B. Mitchell Reed, the legend.
He is a legend. There was absolutely no other disc jockey in the United States like him. Even though I'm sure a lot of radio stations taped him and taped KFWB at the same time, attempting to to get that sound in other cities, but he was unique, and that was the reason KFWB during the '60s was what it is or was at that time, because of gigantic personalities like BMR, and that's exactly what he was. He wasn't just a time and temperature and a lot of the things that you hear today, you know, non-personality disc jockeys, but he was actually one of a kind. You know, he talked so fast and enunciated so well that he was the fastest talker in the West, and you could still understand him. I remember when he left KFWB and went to New York. He was one of the first West Coast jocks to go to New York. And I remember they took a full billboard on Times Square that said in New York, if you can't understand B. Mitchell Reed, you're listening too slow.
In New York, he was hired to be one of the WMCA good guys. Okay, and Ruth Meyer was the program director at the time. She brought him to the East Coast, and she explains now how she got him and what her memories of him are.
Mitch was then working for KFWB, which was a music station at that time, and we had an opening for what we called a teenage idol. So we looked around the country for a very talented disc jockey, and found him in Mitch on the West Coast. It was kind of interesting because we didn't want to tell anybody we were negotiating, getting the whole deal put together until we had it definitely signed. And about a day after we had signed it, we're about to announce it. One of our staff members who had just come back from a trip to the West Coast said, "Well, I hope you're not going to hire a guy that I just heard out there named B. Mitchell Reed. He talks so fast you can't understand a word he says." And it was about the day after we had already signed him. But when he did come to work for us, he just came on as a winner and just kept getting better and better. He had a kind of magic with his audience. He felt his audience more than anybody I've ever seen, anybody I've ever worked with. He got inside their heads. He just felt them with his whole soul. He just knew them so intimately. I've never known anybody who knew an audience that way. And they responded to that, and they felt that coming through to them. You know, he was a very difficult guy. He was so exasperating and so frustrating and so challenging. But even when he was at his most difficult, he was doing even that creatively and excitingly. And when you're, you know, pulling yourself together to really meet the challenge to motivate him when he's being his most difficult, he made you feel so alive that he was making a call on all these resources to motivate him. You know, I haven't worked with Mitch for years, but every day there's still something missing from my day because he's not a part of it, and even after all these years.
Okay, now he talked really fast, but how fast did this guy really talk? The Cruisin' album of 1963 has a brief sampling, but before I play it, our very own Bob Colburn recalls this story.
The Cruisin' series was a tribute to the best disc jockeys of an era gone by, and the actual tapes of the person on the air is not what was used. The disc jockeys had to go back in the studio and recreate, and B. Mitchell Reed, being the fastest tongue anywhere, just couldn't recreate those old top 40 days, and producer Ron Jacobs ended up feeding Beamer about 10 or 12 cups of coffee. They put him back in the booth, and what you hear is the Cruisin' album as it stands today.
Hey Scooters, it's your leader BMR on WMCA, jumping in with my hat in my hand with the nuttiest show in the entire New York turf. Reactivated Smashbacks or on the Good Guy Survey or headed that way. This hour, the name of the winner of the Musical Love Letters Contest. First portion being presented from the lobby of the Nile Hilton Hotel. A name claim style will go to Connecticut. Second call, Diddy of Law Plaza 25,000. And like that there, Shamir, call right now.
My friends all tell me, go to him, run to him.
Well, that was from the Cruisin' album. Now, one of the WMCA good guys in New York City at the time Mitch was there was Scott Muni. They were good friends as well as co-workers and co-good guys. Scott explains the New York nighttime radio scene at that time as he recalls his friendship with Mitch.
B. Mitchell Reed was a night guy in New York. Murray the K was a night person, and I was a night person. As it turned out, we were all on three opposite stations, and the three people between B. Mitchell and Murray and I combined for about 60% of nighttime radio in New York. So we were all doing basically pretty much the same thing, experimenting and playing rock music as such, pop music, or whatever you want to call it, or a combination of both. And, of course, Murray had his submarine race watchers, and we had Beatles and Stones, and we were the kind of the experimenting station. But BMR competed by being someone different. He was a personality that talked fast and that loved what he was doing. And certainly, I would say that the Beamer, or BMR, and he was more BMR in New York, was a guy who lived life in the fast lane, as he talked in the fast lane. And he was a great competitor and a tremendous professional, a great love for music, and a very solo person. People liked him because he loved what he was doing, and that's shared with your audience. When you love your show and you do crazy things, people like you because you're a crazy person. So I think people love BMR because he was a crazy person. And he really was a crazy person. And that just goes through to your audience, you know. And I really, his personal life, I think, is probably very much like Murray's was, or mine is, or anything else. He just, you know, that was something very private and very solo. But once he got on the radio and turned the microphone on, there was B. Mitchell Reed, and if you could hear him, get yourself in a high gear, because that's what you were going to be for the next couple hours whenever he was on, and you had to be in high gear, because otherwise you wouldn't know what the hell he was saying.
From WMCA, Mitch moved back to Los Angeles, and we'll be back with that in just a moment. KLOS, Los Angeles.
In today's Army, we have a lot of choices to offer qualified people. You can choose to learn one of hundreds of skills. Or if where you serve is important, we have a world of choices. And if you choose to go on to college, we can help you accumulate thousands of dollars.
Be all that you can be.
The choices are all yours. Paid for by the U.S. Army.
This is Wilt Chamberlain. When I'm on the basketball court, I know which shoes are best for my game and best for my feet. But now I'm into tennis also. I knew there were lots of different tennis shoes, but I didn't know which ones were exactly right for me. That's why I went to Foot Locker. I knew they have all the top-name sports shoes, all sizes and styles, too. And Foot Locker has those salesmen and striped shirts to help you. I found out they know as much about tennis shoes as I do about basketball shoes. Real pros, those guys.
Foot Locker sales pros. Experts even the experts look up to.
Foot Locker.
Experts even the experts look up to.
Foot Locker.
America's most complete athletic footwear store.
Another reason Foot Locker is the most complete. They honor all your major credit cards. So for complete shopping convenience and expert advice, go to where Wilt Chamberlain goes. Foot Locker.
Big Dan the Dog Man, super do-it-yourselfer. Big Dan the Dog Man, the do-it-yourselfer helper.
I'm Big Dan, the Gumhog Man. You know, a dirty carburetor can sometimes trick you into thinking your car needs a tune-up. Like when it's hard to start or stalls or loses power or performance. So before you spend a small fortune on a tune-up, try Gumhog Carburetor and Fuel System Cleaner. Gumhog liquid in the gas tank cleans as you drive. Not just the carburetor, but deep down into manifold and valves. Even cleans fuel injection systems. And Gum Out Jet Spray cleans outside carburetors, too. So next time your car acts like it needs a tune-up, try Gum Out first. It could save you a bundle. Take it from me.
Big Dan, the Gum Out Man.
Gum Out from Pennzoil. It's the between tune-up tune-up.
It's super good flying.
In 1949, PSA was first to introduce low-fare flying to the West.
You're gonna be smiling.
Today, PSA continues as the West's low-fare leader, so you save big when you fly with us.
So when you need a lift to get you where you're going, take us there.
Flying to the San Francisco Bay Area, PSA sales seat fare is just $49.
$49 to all three Bay Area airports.
Flying to Seattle, PSA sales seat fare is just $79.
$79 to Seattle.
Flying to Tucson, PSA sales seat fare is just $45.
There is no lower fare.
Sales seats are limited, so call PSA or your travel agents. For low fares from Los Angeles, fly the low fare leader.
PSA, the airline that won the West with a smile.
Catch our star, super smile, PSA.
KLOS Los Angeles, we now continue our tribute to the late B. Mitchell Reed with Gail Murphy.
Thank you, Shauna. Now, according to all the information we've collected, it was Beamer's love for L.A. that pulled him back to the Big Orange again after being at WMCA. He returned to KFWB. However, an interesting phenomenon was occurring at the roots of radio at that time. Radio visionary Tom Donahue was putting together something called FM underground radio, free form, and Mitch wanted into that. Tom's widow, Rachel Donahue, describes that period.
In 67, when Tom started what was then called underground radio, which is now called, oh heaven knows, progressive radio, album-oriented radio, B. Mitchell Reed was one of the first top 40 jocks to express an interest in what we were doing and to believe that it would really work, and he took an enormous cut in salary to come work with us. And he did a show which ran simultaneously in Los Angeles and in San Francisco. He would do it in one town and tape and send it to the other. And he still had the heart of a 19-year-old. I think that was probably the thing that was very similar to the two of them, is that they never, as long as they were close to the music, they never, either one of them seemed to age at all. And he stayed with us for quite some time. KPPC in the basement of the Pasadena Presbyterian Church through 67 and 68. That was here in Los Angeles, Pasadena actually. And at the same time, sometimes coming up and doing shows in San Francisco.
Now, I asked Rachel why she and Tom thought Mitch could make the transition from AM to FM. After all, that particular transition had been pulled off successfully by only a handful. She also describes her impressions of B. Mitchell Reed.
Well, I think that he felt the same way that Tom did. I think that he felt he was really stagnated. He had gone to New York, and he had another offer to go back to New York, where he had been quite successful as a fast-talking top 40 disc jockey. And I think that he saw a chance to, in many ways, relive or recreate how it had started for both he and Tom in the early days of top 40. And by this time, it had become a very, very stagnated form. Everything was, all records were very short. There were boss jocks, and everyone had pretty much the same style. And I think that Mitchell saw an opportunity, and he and his wife later their kids were willing to make some sacrifices in order to be part of it, and he was absolutely right. And he got a great deal of joy out of it, introducing groups, and he lent a certain amount of credibility to our organization. He worked very, very fast. He moved very, very, very quickly, and he was always had at least three things on his mind. And he usually forgot to tell you two of them the first time. So he'd either call you back or come back into the room or whatever situation he had just left in order to tell you the other two things that he'd forgotten to tell you. And he was very much a family man. And my heart goes out to his wife, Carol, and their kids. I'll miss him very, very much, not just listening to him, but having him as a friend. But he's been on my airwaves for an awfully long time.
Also a member of this FM underground group or collective or organization was Dusty Street, and she remembers the Beamer.
Hi, this is Dusty Street, and I'd like to talk about how I became, how I came to know B. Mitchell Reed. I was working in San Francisco for a man named Tom Donahue at one of the first progressive radio stations, FM stations, and B. Mitchell Reed came in as a friend of Tom Donahue's when I was about 18 years old and walked into my booth and said, "Hey, you know, you're really a lot of fun on the radio," which was probably the first time I had ever been given an encouraging word as to why I should remain being a disc jockey. Mitchell and I were in separate towns for many years, I in San Francisco and he down here in L.A., but we always seemed to cross paths. We both worked for Metro Media, and each time we crossed paths, it was always lots of fun and whatever. Then, and I think in about 2 years ago, I went to work at a radio station here in Los Angeles, KLOS, and Mitchell was working for KLOS at the time. And we had the opportunity to actually cross over from one slot to the other. And I'll always remember those crossovers and Mitchell saying things like, "We've got no business but music business." Little tiny quirks that he would say, little things of brevity that always made me think, boy, someday maybe I'll be as good as B. Mitchell Reed. And I'm still waiting for that day.
From there, Mitch went to KMET along with the rest of the undergrounders. Howard Bloom was at KMET when Mitch arrived. He sketches the underground format and some of his impressions.
This is Howard Bloom, Vice President and General Manager at KMET, and I first worked with Mitchell in 1970 when I was a salesman. Before I became sales manager and then general manager. And Mitchell, his first and foremost responsibility was to be loved and to love people. And Mitchell was very special. And through all the years that he worked here, he would do everything that he could to make everything work for KMET, as he did at KFWB, as he did at KPPC and KRLA, and the stations that he worked for in New York, as well as at KLOS. He was very special, and I think singularly that's the one word that I would use when talking about B. Mitchell Reed.
Later on at KMET, he encountered Jim Ladd, and Jim remembers this.
This is Jim Ladd, and my first encounter with B. Mitchell Reed was at a time when music meant so much to the people who not only played it, the musicians who made it, but the people who listened. He was a man who was making a great deal of money and was extremely successful on Top 40 AM radio. I never listened to him on Top 40, but I know that he was very successful. And he walked away from the money and the prestige and all of the notoriety to do something that he believed in. He believed in this new form of rock and roll that was coming about. He believed that it had something to say on a human level. And for those reasons, as I understand it, is how Beamer got into FM radio. Later, after I got into radio and went to work at KMET, I had the privilege of working with the man and met him and got to talk to him. And although I never got to be close to B. Mitch personally, I did get to work with him and have many talks with him. And I interviewed him once for a special that I did on FM radio. And I was so impressed with his knowledge and his bearing and how good he was. And it was always a distinct privilege for me to, you know, to be able to say that I got to work on the same radio station that B. Mitchell Reed did, because he was a pioneer in every sense of the word. And he was a man who had a lot of integrity about what he did. And there's a lot of people who can talk about the different kinds of radio that he did, but what impressed me the most was the free-form rock and roll that B. Mitchell Reed, I think, is best known for. Obviously, he will be missed. Radio will not be the same. and neither will I with his passing.
In 1979, B. Mitchell Reed moved over again. This time it was to our own KLOS, and our own Bob Colburn recalls what it was like knowing BMR.
The thing I remember the most about B. Mitchell Reed is his stature professionally and also in his private life. When Beamer was the host of Rockline, it was the rock and roll stars who were in awe of him when they came into the booth because they had listened to him from the time that they were little kids back in New York or here out in Los Angeles. The same thing held true with Beamer's private life. He was often referred to as the mayor of Malibu, being instrumental in some political movements out there, and held the same care, obviously, for his family, his two sons, and his wife.
Several of the people here at KLOS worked with Mitch over the years, and one of them is Sam Russell, as she recalls him.
I'm Sam Russell, and I've worked with Mitch off and on at about four different radio stations for a grand total of 12 years, and somehow Mitchell had a way of getting what he wanted without really saying anything. He'd come in, and you'd drop everything you're doing just to go get him a cup of coffee or get a record for him, and drop everything you did because that was the way Mitchell was, and that's why everybody loved him.
KLOS's program director, Tommy Hadges, describes his first encounter with Mitch.
I'm Tommy Hadges, program director at KLOS. I arrived here in 1980 in Southern California, and Beamer was already on the air. First time I'd ever heard Beamer was years before when I listened to the Cruising album, which was an example of what he had done when he was at KFWB, the fast-talking, typical top 40 jock, real fast talking. And when I found out he was on the air staff here, I was saying to myself, gee, can this guy actually be the same one that I remember from that record? So I sat down with Beamer when I first got out here, and he explained to me about how he had made the transition and how he had tried to relate to the big records, as he used to call them, you know, the 12-inch records as opposed to the 7-inch stations were playing in those days. And to have made that jump and to have kept the credibility of going from a top 40 jock to a progressive jock and then to do what we now call AOR, album-oriented radio, is, I think, unique in the industry. It's one of the few people actually able to make that jump. In working with Beamer on a day-to-day basis, the thing I remember most vividly, and it's strange how things stick in your mind about people, I'll never forget Beamer bumming cigarettes off of any and everybody that was within reach of the radio station because he had been told that he shouldn't smoke, so he stopped buying cigarettes and never had them on his person. But we'd noticed that, you know, Ruth, music director here, smokes, and so he'd sort of fly through the office, and all of a sudden she discovered that there were a few cigarettes missing. And we'd always say to him, Beamer, do you have those cigarettes? And there'd be a little puff of smoke in the studio when we walk in, and he'd say, no smoking going on in here. So it's strange how those things stick with you, but I guess that's something I'll always remember about him. A unique guy, and probably known as well as any radio personality on a national basis because of his extreme influence and importance on both coasts and in several decades of radio, and a guy I'll never forget.
KLOS engineer Ira Lawson worked with the Beamer a lot, and he recalls him.
My name is Ira Lawson, and I used to be one of B. Mitchell Reed's engineers. And working with the Beamer was kind of a trip because sometimes he'd be just a little disorganized in there, and he'd sometimes struggle, and he'd look at me, and we developed this rapport to where he would give me one look, and I'd know that he was searching for the band that we just played, and he would give me another look, and I would know that he had lost his place completely, and it was commercial time. But all in all, he was a dear, sweet man, and we're really going to miss him here.
Also, engineer Steve Crowley.
BMR would come in here at the end of the shift when we exchange announcers. The people getting off the air will come in, and they'll read a couple of things for recorded commercial announcements. And Beamer would come in here, and he would whiz through these things so fast, he'd be asking me if the takes were okay and if they could be used before I even had time to shut off the microphone. The man just clicked that fast.
Now, across the hall from KLOS's KABC, Lee Marshall is a newscaster over there, and he was a friend of Mitch's as well.
Mitch used to come into the newsroom all the time. Mitch was always famous for putting on long records. And he'd sneak in and we'd schmooze, and he was a great Dodger fan, as you know, great sports fan. And he loved the Dodgers. And he always talked about how his then 11-year-old son was going to be the first Jewish third baseman of the Los Angeles Dodgers. You have to remember that, B. Mitchell Reed was born Burton Mitchell Goldberg. And he did change his name.
Burton Mitchell Goldberg, B. Mitchell Reed, BMR, the Beamer. I'm Gail Murphy, and thank you.
It's our pleasure to introduce Miss Joni Mitchell.
KLOS, and thank you to Gail Murphy for that very special tribute to the late B. Mitchell Reed. We'll be back after this.
What moves you? The annual open house is just around the corner. A weekend filled with the world's most exciting motorcycles. They challenge you to discover what performance is all about. Take home a free deck of Honda playing cards. Enter the drawing for a Honda Urban Express. Get a great deal on a new 82 Honda during the Red Line Super Sale. The Honda Open House. It's all happening this weekend. Check participating dealers for details.
Licensed drivers only. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary.
At Saugus Speedway, you'll see up to 40 tons of high-powered stock cars on a 1/3 mile asphalt track. At the corners, the track gets narrow. At Saugus Speedway, you sit right on top of the action. Saugus Speedway every Saturday night. Time trials at 5:30. First race at 7. You'll see modified, sportsmen, street stock, figure eights, and a giant destruction derby the last Saturday of every month. Saugus Speedway, Golden State Freeway North, Valencia Boulevard off ramp. Turn right 3.25 miles to Saugus Speedway. The super track.
Come to Saugus Speedway this Saturday night for the exciting 3rd Annual Spring Open Comp and Destruction Derby. See top modified and sportsman drivers battle it out to win the first big race of the season. Time trials at 5:30, first race at 7. Remember, the 3rd Annual Spring Open Comp and Destruction Derby, Saturday night, 7 p.m. at Saugus Speedway.
Scent Colorsational Fan Colortastic line of cosmetics you've ever worn for eyes, lips, cheeks, and nails. And they're good for you, too, because they're Almay Pure.
Color Plus is always new. Almay Pure is good for you.
Color Plus is sensuous. Color Plus is rich and lush. I've got Plus, it's adventurous.
Plus cosmetics are available at Thrifty and other fine stores.
Here we are at the Wild Pair, where you can put your feet in fast forward, the relaxed one-stop shop for he and she footwear, bags, belts, and leg looks. A large crowd of people here in front of the Wild Pair, some carrying torches. Sir, are you the leader of this group?
Yes, sir. My name is Sweet Bill of Sunday, and I'm the president of the ANMF.
The ANMF? What is that?
American National Monument Finders.
Why are you here at the Wild Pair?
Because we feel the Wild Pair shoe stars should, because of their beauty, be named National Monument.
Well, you're probably referring, sir, to the new colorful fabric and leather sandals and soft leather pumps way lower up high for she.
That's just part of it, friend. Look at that here.
Well, those are soft flex leathers for dress wear and fabric casuals for off hours and fashion right colors for guys.
That's right, and everything about the store is beautiful. Everything is an aesthetic perfection.
Well,
we feel that this store and all Wild Pair shoe stores must be designated national monuments.
Well, that's an incredible thing to try to do, sir, but it's going to be very difficult, isn't it?
Well, it's my hobby.
For pace-setting designs in footwear, bags, belts, and leg looks, it's a Wild Pair with 17 great locations in the Los Angeles area. MasterCard, Visa.
KLOS is proud to welcome Styx to the Pantages Theater for four nights, March 22nd, 23rd, 25th, and 26th. Due to the extremely limited capacity of the theater, tickets for these historic performances sold out immediately. If you weren't able to get tickets but would like to go, we've got a couple of pair of tickets right now provided by Frontline Management to give away to the first two callers that reach us from L.A. at 520-9512, from Orange County at 977-KLOS, or direct from the 805 area at 583-KLOS. And in addition to every pair, we'll provide you with a copy of the brand new Styx album, Kilroy Was Here. We'll be giving away more later today, so keep it tuned to KLOS for your chance to see Styx in concert at the Pantages Theater for free. Compliments of 95.5 KLOS Los Angeles, Southern California's concert leader, Billy Jugson, for Linda today. Have a great afternoon. Six in a row commercial free with Pink Floyd.
Airchecks.com.